Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Switch it, here's Pierce again. A Smith screen. Posey will defend. Oh! LeBron James with no regard for human life. Buckle up for Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant just sucked the gravity out of the target center. What a play!
On the last weekend of the regular season in the NFL, if the Chiefs win and New England loses, the Chiefs will be the 2 seed.
I'm getting confused. What game are you calling?
I'm calling both games. Four-man front. Receiver in motion. Low snap. He runs and he throws. Caught. Touchdown. It's caught. Hardman caught the ball. The Chiefs have won. The Chiefs are back-to-back Super Bowl champions.
And that is the familiar voice of Kevin Harlan of CBS Sports, Westwood One Radio, and starting this fall, Amazon Prime Video. And he is the guest on a special edition of the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, and in a moment, Armon Brody, Derek Futterman, and I will be joined by Kevin for a discussion of his career, his new role on Prime Video, and much more. But before we get to that, if you have not already, please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. That's where you can find previous interviews, like the one we just did the other day with James Brown of CBS Sports, or you can go back a week. We had Chris Myers of Fox on earlier in the month as well. So plenty of content on the SMW podcast feed, and if you don't mind leaving us a kind review as well, it would be greatly appreciated. All right, let's get right to it. It's Kevin Harlan of CBS, Westwood One, and Amazon for a discussion that I think you will all enjoy. Okay, well, we are very honored to be joined by Kevin Harlan, one of the best-known play-by-play voices in this industry. I think whether you're talking about the NFL or the NBA, or if you go back far enough, even a Mike Tyson fight back in the 90s, you've been hearing Kevin Harlan's voice probably your whole life. I know I certainly have been, and Kevin, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
John, great to be out with all of you guys. Thanks for having me, and always fun to visit about the business, which continues to change and twist and turn, it seems like, every day.
Absolutely. Why don't we start with your most recent assignment? We are taping the Thursday after week 2 here in 2025, and the most recent game you've done, I would have to think it's the first time you've ever called a game where both teams won. The Broncos win, and then the Colts win. Is that something you've ever had happen before?
Well, not in that particular circumstance. Leverage is not a call you see very often. It's been so well coached that it's a rare call. And in a game-deciding play like that, you kind of raise your eyebrows a little bit. It wasn't blocked. It was a 60-yarder. It would have been difficult. The infraction was minimal at best, but it was technically the right call. I think all parties have agreed, but it's like holding on any play in the NFL or college. There's a hold on every single snap. So it's, I guess, the judgment of the officiating crew as to how far it goes. There's a lot in the balance. Clearly, the kick was not even close. And a 15-yard penalty is pretty significant. So when it appeared that the Broncos had held on to win, in actuality, the penalty cost him in 15 yards and a field goal try again, gave it to Daniel Jones and the Colts. So I have not called a game like that. Ironically enough, or if you're not a Broncos fan, it doesn't matter, but if you are a Broncos fan, it would stick. I did the Chiefs and Broncos last year at Arrowhead, and the Broncos had moved in very close on a field goal try to win it mid-season, and the Chiefs blocked the field goal try. So Bronco fans are not all that happy with me right now, in terms of the luck or unlucky status I brought them. But we have them again this weekend in Los Angeles against the Chargers. So maybe they can redeem themselves a bit. But I've never had a game end like that for sure.
And this is such an interesting time for you in your career. Obviously, you're still doing the NFL on CBS and have been doing that for many years. But this year, in about a month or so, you're going to be doing the NBA for Amazon Prime Video. And it's going to be a lot of people you've worked with at TNT, but it's going to be this completely new network that's never aired the NBA before. As far as your career goes, having been with the same group for so long, what is it like for you to be at the ground floor of something new?
Well, it comes with great sadness that my 30 years at TNT have come to a close, and I share that with many of my colleagues there. But at the same time, by the grace of God and a lot of luck and fortunate things that have happened in my career, this Amazon opportunity happened, and I'm so grateful for the chance they've given me to continue with the NBA. This will be my 39th year doing the NBA. I don't take that assignment lightly in any way. We're out in Los Angeles for the meetings that Amazon had a month or so ago, a little bit more than that. And the spirit and the vitality and the zest they all have for this new venture is contagious. And I'm like everybody else that's joining their team, thrilled to have the opportunity and can't wait to get going. I have purposefully constructed this 3-year deal with them on a reduced schedule. Quite frankly, at the end of the TNT run, I was pretty satisfied with where I was in terms of filling that great desire to be with the league. I thought this might be a good place to rest with TNT closing the door and shutting off the lights on the NBA. So I was kind of, maybe at one time, kind of thinking, good, this is at my stage in my career, having done it for almost 4 decades, totally, pretty satisfied. And then Amazon, during the midst of last season, came around and were incredibly generous. But my wife and I sat down and looked at the schedule and thought, you know, this is a good time to kind of reboot, reset. I had been doing Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday for Turner. And on some weeks, multiple games, and then a schedule that lasted into June. And I was just ready to kind of pull back a little bit. So Amazon gave me that chance, so I can still be a part of their team, but not with near the number of games that I had with TNT. So I'm looking forward to that. My NFL schedule is as robust as ever, but joining a new team, being with Amazon, and their excitement for the NBA, as I mentioned before, is contagious, and I can't wait to get started.
What's been the challenge over the years to balance football broadcasts? Because, you know, again, it's not just CBS, it's Westwood One Radio on Monday nights. And then on top of that, doing the basketball broadcast for Turner.
Well, it's been rigorous because it was for the last handful plus years, it's been 3 consecutive games, 3 consecutive nights, 3 different cities, up early in the morning, leaving to catch a flight, and making sure that for each of those 3 separate employers that I'm at my best. And I've kind of prided myself on keeping energy up, staying as current and as present with each of those individual assignments, because my CBS people don't care about Westwood, and my Westwood people don't care about Turner, and my Turner people don't care about the other two. And so that has been always a very challenging yet wonderful challenge to meet. And I'm proud of the way that I've handled that for all these years. Turner, until recently, had had me just on Thursdays. And then they added Tuesdays about 6-7 years ago to our schedule. And they only told me 2 weeks before the schedule was going to be announced, oh, hey, by the way, we're going to shift during football season to Tuesdays instead of Thursdays. And I said, really? Well, that's interesting, because that means it's 3 and 3 nights. But I like that challenge. I embraced what was ahead of me. And as difficult as it might have been with my travel and being away from home, I'm proud of those years that it was 3 and 3 nights. But quite frankly, it also opened my eyes a little bit thinking, you know, the race has been run and I'm ready now at a very opportune time, at a very clear demarcation with one closing and one beginning to reboot, like I mentioned before, and reassess what really I want my falls to look like. And the NFL is such a, it's a vigorous study process because of 2 games, back-to-back nights, 4 teams, 53-man rosters, all of it. And I want to make sure that I'm fresh and ready for that challenge of just doing 2, let alone tacking on a 3rd and doing that justice. So this works out great. I'm going to do 1 game in October, 1 game in November, 1 NBA game in December, and then pick up a full load beginning in January. And excited for that. They've been great about my schedule at Amazon, and I really appreciate that. And now I feel like I've cut back as I wanted, as my wife and I wanted our schedule to look like. Cut back on that and still be fully involved with the NBA, but just knocking out some of the first quarter of the season games, which can sometimes get lost on the schedule, but clearly a schedule that is personally very, very satisfying.
Kevin, there's been so much talk about how the NBA is covered. With Amazon and NBC now joining the party, what should fans expect in terms of how the league is covered, how broadcasters and commentators talk about the league?
You bring up an interesting point because I don't think that the clarity of criticism has been lost during games, but there's been a lot outside the game with studio shows and podcasts and things like that that have tended to slant toward different kinds of topics. When we're doing the game, we've got to be 98% game. Now, we'll bring in overarching themes and headlines, clearly. But we're there to do that game. And I think the sense I've gotten from Amazon is at the end of the day, any of us that are talking about the NBA are, you know, we're celebrating it because we're fans at heart. I am clearly a fan of the league at heart. And it never astounds me doing these games courtside with that great seat, how incredible the game is and how great those athletes are. I think doing the game needs to be in its own lane. And I don't know that as we're broadcasting the game, we need to delve into a lot of these other issues. That's what the pre, half, and post game show, the other shows during the week on non-game nights are for, podcasts are for, talk radio is for, and they can handle that. But our job is to broadcast the game. And I've always been comfortable in that seat doing that. So celebrating the game, to your point, celebrating the game, enjoying the incredible athleticism, criticizing when necessary. And we've got people that have played the game, coached the game, that can do that far better than I can. But the great job about my position is I'm not speaking for all play-by-play people. I don't have to be the editor. I can be the person reporting on what's going on, chronicling the game, excited for these plays, and if there needs to be some context given, we can begin that conversation, but it's up to the analyst to finish it and really frame it. So I feel like I could do those things, but I enjoy my role of being a reporter first and foremost, and that's a comfortable seat for me to be in.
I want to go back in time a little bit. Let's go all the way back to 1991. And Michael Jordan and the Bulls, they have just won their first NBA title. And there's a job opening. Jim Durham is out. And Kevin Harlan is potentially in.
How do you know about this? How did anybody remember that story? My gosh.
Well, yeah, no, this was an opportunity for you to get in at the ground floor with Jordan at the Bulls and call the next 5 of their titles. But you chose to stay with the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I just wanted to know what went into, you know, at that stage in your career, I think you were maybe 30 years old. Do you ever think about if you had done that and gone to that role?
think about it from time to time, yes, but the job necessitated a move to Chicago from our Kansas City home, which we were starting our young family and had two little kids, and we were going to add two more over the years, but we had our two little babies, and my wife was comfortable in Kansas City. I went to Kansas. We met after college, and that was our home, and I didn't want to move to Chicago, and the job necessitated that. And the other part of that was it was going to cut into my NFL work, and I didn't like that part of it either. They were not willing to let me miss Sunday games, as few as there might have been. And of course, by that, everything, kind of goes in line, right? So by not accepting that Chicago Bulls offer in 91, I did miss out on the Jordan run, the Pippen run, the great championship run of Coach Phil Jackson. But by staying with the Chiefs on the radio side, as I had been doing, and keeping the Timberwolves job, it led to some other things. I got a chance to do a game for NBC, which led to my 2 years at ESPN doing a game right after game day. Then that led to Fox and getting hired there in 94. And so, as it turned out, it was the right decision. But clearly, there are always things that come along your path that you think, what if, what if? I've always been one to kind of just, let's do the job. I'm doing the best of my ability. And if things happen, great. And if they don't, no regrets. Making the best decision at the time of that offer. So sure, you can fantasize about what that run would have been like. But by staying where I was, it really worked out well and led to these chances. First of all, the game at NBC. And that game with Joe Namath led to doing a 2-year stint at ESPN that Fox saw, and then Fox picked me up in 94 when they got the rights. And then the Fox 4 years led to my CBS run. So all of it worked out, but it would have been fun. And I don't have any regrets, but if you think about things that maybe I had a chance to do, and there have been other things like that as well. I had a Cardinal baseball job offered to me back in the late 80s working alongside Jack Buck and Mike Shannon on KMOX and didn't accept that job. So all of us in the business have had those opportunities, but I have no regrets and wouldn't change anything in my very fortunate and very, very lucky career.
Now, it's interesting because 85 to 93, you're doing Kansas City Chiefs radio, the University of Missouri football and basketball on the radio as well. The T-Wolves job, as you mentioned, but then Fox in 94, you bring that property on the air, and then 1998 with the NFL on CBS. What was the adjustment like in going to the national broadcast? Because that's primarily what you've been doing outside of the Packers preseason. What was that like?
It was a great challenge. Happened early enough in my career where I could change my way a little bit, but have found out that the best thing is always to kind of stay yourself. And I've always said that I'm probably more fan than I am broadcaster. I love big plays. I love big moments. I think it probably comes out with my energy during the games. I never want to be asleep at the wheel. I always want to be engaged. But clearly in our business, getting a network job is the goal, or maybe the end game for a lot of people, not for everyone. But at the time, it was an incredibly exciting chance. And the reason why I left Fox to go to CBS, quite frankly, was to do basketball. Fox did not have basketball at the time. Fox had baseball and the NFL. And I didn't want to do baseball because I didn't want to screw up my summers. And I turned down a baseball job earlier with the Cardinals. And really, what CBS had to offer was the NFL and those great letters, those iconic letters, CBS, but also doing college basketball. And so that was the reason why I left. And it was hard to leave because I enjoyed being at Fox and being one of the four younger broadcasters they brought in and back of Summerall and Stockton, who were so gracious and so great to me, as they were with Joe and Kenny and Tom. And I think all four of us would say unequivocally that being in that room with those two iconic play-by-play men helped shape all of us for what was to come. And both were great to us. And so that was a great place to be. But going to CBS meant college basketball and something else I could do Whereas at Fox, it was just NFL. And that was the reason I went. And then, of course, working with Sean McManus and Tony Petitti was huge. So, but I enjoyed my years at Fox, and the move there to CBS was a gift from above, because it's been my life's joy to be a part of that CBS team and be at that iconic location.
Kevin, John mentioned a moment ago, or maybe you mentioned, I think, the energy you bring to a broadcast as a fan. I just need to know, how does one suck the gravity out of a building?
I don't know. You know, when you apply for these jobs, there isn't a thing on the employment sheet that asks you for your IQ. And so I think that the dumber you are, the easier things flow back and forth. There are things that I say on these games. I don't know where they come. I don't know how they get into it. But I've always thought that these are gravity-defying athletes that we see on an NBA floor, from Dr. J, who I had the chance to call, to David Thompson, who I had a chance to call, to then Jordan and Kobe and LeBron and all the other, and Vince, all these great high flyers. But they defy gravity. So anybody could have said something like that. But I don't know where that comes from, quite frankly. And it's, and I probably don't want to know, actually. I'm not sure, and I don't think I want to know where it comes from. But I do enjoy the acrobatic side of the game, and whatever comes out is just, having called thousands of games, and there's a comfort level. You know, sometimes in broadcasting, you can get too tight, and you don't let it just kind of flow and just kind of happen. And the more that I've been lucky enough to do, the more comfortable I probably have become. And I think that's probably where a lot of that kind of stuff comes from, quite frankly.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
There was an announcer, Ray Scott, one of the legendary NFL voices. And in 1995, he was listing some of the current announcers he likes. And this included Al Michaels, Vern Lundquist, Jim Nantz, and of course, Pat Summerall. And it also included Kevin Harlan. You at that time, I would have been maybe mid-30s. This is in the Fox stage of your career. To be able to have earned that level of respect that early in your career, what did that mean to you at that time?
Well, my dad had called me and said, I just read this quote by Ray Scott. I hadn't seen it. And I said, Dad, where'd you see that? And he told me, and I quickly had to figure out how I can get my hands on it. Clearly, coming from someone like that, it meant everything. Ray Scott is on that Mount Rushmore of play-by-play people in the NFL. And that meant a great deal from someone like that. I mean, there's not that you're ever looking for affirmation, not you're ever looking for a label or a stamp of approval. And if it comes kind of organically like that, it means more. You're not out hunting for it. He just happened to say it. I don't know the circumstances. I can't recall now, but I can tell you that it was a boost of confidence that I've never forgotten. I'm so glad you've mentioned it. I don't think anyone has asked me that or talked about that since it was in print from Ray Scott. I think my dad actually saw it in Pro Football Weekly, if I'm not mistaken. And You know, this is kind of pre-internet almost. And so I had to get a copy of that. And I think that's where I saw it. It may have been in other publications too, but it meant the world. I'm so glad you brought that up because I haven't thought about that quote for a while. And of always, there have been few things I've really appreciated as much as I've appreciated that comment from him and what he said, being who he was and continues to have that iconic presence in our business, even though he's long since passed.
Now, you've been calling games for Westwood One for a long time, over two decades. Started, I believe, in college basketball, and you've done it on the football side. While you've really attained success on the television side, what made you want to continue doing radio? What makes that medium special for you?
Well, when I was a kid, you know, 10, 11 years old, I fell asleep listening to iconic radio voices, Jack Buck, Lindsey Nelson, Jim Simpson, Joe Tate I could get on 3WE out of Cleveland, and of course, Jim Durham out of Chicago. He was on WCFL, and then I think they've jumped from station to station, but I was always able to get those two in particular at night and grew up on the descriptive styles of Tate and Durham. I just romanticized about the business so much as a kid, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old, about these voices and their perch in a stadium or courtside and just the skill at creating such a vivid impression in my mind. And that was my first real, I was first drawn to the business hearing Facenda narrate Super Bowl I. That's when I was about 8 years old, 7 years old. And I heard that and I was a sports fan, but loved the narration. And that kind of hit a switch for me. And then began to listen to broadcasters, and in particular, the names I just rattled off, and just the way they painted a picture. And I thought, you know, as I went along, that's what I want to do. I want to be the John Ward of a college broadcast, who was the voice of the Tennessee Volunteers, or Kaywood Ledford really was another one that I listened to a lot on WHAS out of Louisville. These were the giants in my mind, and their ability with these great voices to do what they did, it was just so compelling and captivating to me that that's what I wanted to do. And I can remember when I was in college producing the Chiefs pregame show as a sophomore, junior, and senior at the University of Kansas. I was producing the pre, half, and post for the Chiefs radio network. But when Tony Roberts would come into Arrowhead and do a game for Mutual, I could not take my eyes off him. And Pat Sheridan was doing the color. Now, these are names that are going to mean nothing to people that are listening. But to me, these were voices that I, and Tony Roberts would do a Notre Dame game on Saturday and then fly in, do an NFL, with a big NFL afternoon game on Sunday. I thought, that's what I want to do. So fast forward, radio to me is the purest form of broadcasting. It's voice, it's delivery, it's resonance, it's inflection, it's the energy, it's the word usage, it's the descriptive detail which can make a play if you're driving alone in a car at night hearing one of our games can be even more vivid and more in the theater of your mind, have it mean even more than if you saw it with your own eyes on a replay. It's reporting skills, word usage, it's all these things that every broadcaster, whether they're doing news or sports, they've got to have. It's doing things off the top of your head. It's the quick twitch, which is such a skill. It is an art form that I admired as a kid that I strive to this day. And I've been doing radio play-by-play since I was 14 on over the air. The challenge is so great to do it the right way. And after every game, I go back and listen. I've got a chart that I use. I go back and mark every play with all the things that I think are important. And it's a wide list. It's a deep list. But I always feel like I feel if I can just get a little bit better every broadcast, and I have I call it POE at the top of my boards, point of emphasis from things from the last broadcast that I want to work on for that. And the radio broadcast, I think, helps me on TV, and there are things I do on the TV broadcast that help me on radio. But when I sit in that Monday night chair and put on that headset for Westwood One, which was the umbrella for all the radio networks, including Mutual and CBS Radio, and sit in that same seat that Jack Buck sat in, that Lindsey Nelson sat in, that the great Don Crickey sat in, Simpson for a while, all these great broadcasters, it does something to my heart in working for these people at Cumulus. It reminds me every time I put on that headset why I love the business, why I want to get into the business, and why I want to continue to evolve in the business. I love the challenge of trying to get better, and I'll do it until my last broadcast, but I love the challenge that radio presents me each Monday night of trying to paint the perfect picture for the listener. And I think our listeners, you know, the podcast business has helped radio. And because sports talk radio and podcasts, and I think it's brought people back to listening more. And just think of it. You've got such a captive audience in that car, or if you're mowing your grass or on a field plowing it, you know, wherever you may be, whatever you may be doing, if you're only able to listen, to give that listener the best possible word usage of a play, descriptive style, with the voice and delivery that I think I need, I love that challenge. And it propels me week after week after week. So I am living a dream every Monday night doing these games. I love my TV job. TV just kind of happened. Radio was my first love. And here I am at this stage of my career after this, my 41st consecutive year doing NFL play-by-play. And every Monday night, I get to renew that love affair with why and remind myself why I got in the business and why I love this business so much because of what I get to do on Mondays. The TV thing is an honor beyond description, but the radio brings it back to my heart.
And just to build off that quickly, in terms of, you know, Bruce Gilbert, Howie Dinneroff, and now Mike Eby, they've put you on the Super Bowl for the last 15 years. This is going to be year 16 calling the Super Bowl consecutive for Westwood One Radio. What makes that assignment so special, so unique for you?
Well, kind of like what I just said before, to sit in that seat with all the people that have called that great game, Marv Albert and Howard David and all the others, Jack Buck, clearly. Jack Buck did it for 8 years in a row. Then NBC Radio got it for two, and Crickey did it for 2 years. And I can just tell one quick Don Crickey story. When I was a kid, 12, 13 years old, I wrote a letter to Don Crickey, who was that time, I think, at CBS. And I wanted to go to Notre Dame because he went to Notre Dame. And I wrote Crickey and had been listening to him do these games on TV and radio and loved his voice. He did TWA commercials, so I got to hear it there, and then I began to follow him, and he typed a letter, a two-page letter, which I still have, when I was like 13 years old, 12 years old, telling me about going to Notre Dame, but about the business and what it meant for him and work on delivery and all these great things. But to sit in that seat that he sat in, that Buck sat in, that Marv sat in, is such an honor. And I always think, how many broadcasters, play-by-play people today would switch places with? The only person that would not is the guy doing TV, whoever it might be, Michaels or Kevin or Jim or Joe. But everybody else, they would jump in my seat to do that broadcast, which is heard worldwide, in a heartbeat, and they would do it for nothing. And so believe me, that assignment is so precious to me, and it is never lost on me of who has done that broadcast, who's done that game, the great voices before me. And as a twist of fate, the irony of the business, the guy that did CBS and NBC Radio used to do the early broadcasts of the Super Bowl, I think through maybe Super Bowl 5 or 6. On the very first Super Bowl, they went to a team announcer. And that was Tom Hedrick, who was doing the Chiefs radio play-by-play. And they gave Tom the option of doing the regional radio on the Chiefs or going to CBS radio doing the national broadcast. And he chose to go to CBS, did Super Bowl I for the Chiefs and the Packers in Super Bowl I from LA. Fast forward, when I went to the University of Kansas, I was recruited there by the voice of the Jayhawks on the Jayhawk Football and Basketball Radio Network, and his name was Tom Hedrick, and he was doing the Jayhawks. And I did his sideline pregame, halftime, and postgame for Tom as an 18-year-old freshman at Kansas. And then I would go on, by the luck of the business, to end up doing the Super Bowl and then do the Chiefs when they were back in the Super Bowl for the first time and won it 50 years after he had done Super Bowl I. So the business is very strange and incredibly gratifying, can be excruciating, but that is one of the moments that I embrace, is that I was able to do that Chiefs' first Super Bowl win in 50 years after he had done it in Super Bowl IV as a winner, but the first time they had been in the Super Bowl and Super Bowl I back in the 67 season, 68 Super Bowl in L.A.
Not only does Tom have that connection with you, Kevin, but Tom Hedrick wrote a book called The Art of Sportscasting. And I studied that book for my...
You guys do your homework. Holy smoke.
I studied that book in college, and I'm pretty sure you're quoted in that book as well. And I still have that book at my parents' home. So, yeah, the world is rather small. It's pretty cool.
It is.
You work with a lot of partners, especially on radio. Kurt Warner, Devin McCourty, Jason McCourty, Tony Baselli, Ross Tucker. You work with so many partners. Because radio is dominated by the play-by-play announcer, how do you communicate with each one of your analysts to let them know when you're inviting them to speak or when you need to kind of dominate the moment there? How do you communicate that, maybe even non-verbally?
Well, the great people at Westwood One have coached whoever I'm working with on that structure, right? And I've never had a partner, and I had many great years with Boomer Esiason, and thoroughly enjoyed him so much. And now you mentioned Kurt Warner, who quarterbacks just see the game differently, but they also know when it's time to hand off. And I think that has been the great thing about for Mike Eby and all the people, Howard Dinneroff before him, led by Bruce. They've all, I think, coached these guys so well, saying radio is more of a play-by-play dominant medium, exact opposite in TV. That is an analyst-driven medium. Play-by-play probably is fourth and most important, picture number one. Analyst number two. Replays, graphics, bells and whistles number three. Then the play-by-play guy on TV. Radio, it would be the play-by-play guy first. And all these different gentlemen that I've had a great chance to work with have all gotten that word. Rarely have any of them ever crept in. And if they do, they do. It happens. It's no big deal. But it's not like I'm giving them the Heisman, telling them to shut up or anything like that. But what I had done early on with the new partner is done a little bit more of an animated, and the gain to the 25, it is second down and five. And I might look at them and kind of point saying, all right, now is a great time. And I'll do it on TV too with Trent Green or Rich Gannon, whoever I'm working with there. I'll tap them. And you know, when they know that I'm finished talking, so we can kind of get in a rhythm, and then that rhythm kind of is self-explanatory, and they pretty much figure it out after that. But they've all been great, and they know the structure. They know what lane they've got to stay in. But our people at Westwood have been a great job of kind of coaching them beforehand, kind of letting them know. And I try to get out, and I'm very cognizant of trying to be as efficient as I can, but you've got to serve a couple different things that you don't on TV to our radio audience. Constant location, time and score, and a quick AP, I call it AP headlines, a quick headline of the game to that point. So there are things that have got to get in that you just cannot shrug off. Whereas on TV, score's constantly on the screen. They can see where the ball is. They can pretty much see who's in the game. You know, they can see so much, you don't have to say as much. On radio, you've got to fill in those blank spaces and paint that canvas, which is discipline. But after a while, they get it. And quite frankly, after doing it for so many years, whether it was radio for the Final Fours, I did five of those, then transitioned into football, it's never been an issue, quite frankly.
Your appreciation for the craft of radio really shines through. One of the interesting things in this industry is TV gets so many of the headlines. Whether it's my website or other websites, there's not a lot of talk of radio and radio play-by-play, radio announcers. What do you think it is about radio versus TV that kind of makes it almost under the radar in the burgeoning sports media industry, the industry of covering sports media?
Well, I mean, TV has just evolved so much, and radio really hasn't. Radio has been radio since the first broadcast back in the 20s. I mean, there really has not been much change. Radio stations have changed, formats change, the technology has changed, but the play-by-play on radio has basically stayed the same. On TV, we've had the addition of cable. Now we've got streaming, and we've got all these different shows. And now part of the network broadcasts are the shows around the games and the emphasis on the pregame and on the halftime and the postgame. Those shows get more attention sometimes than the game themselves. So it's really TV has evolved, streaming, cable, all the different ways you can watch. That is changing literally day to day, whereas radio has stayed the same. The only difference has been that maybe radio audiences overall have declined, but I think sports listenership, news, weather, those things have stayed pretty stable. And I began our conversation with podcasts. I think the podcast industry has reawakened people to the art of listening and listening intently. And I always say to our sponsors we talk to at the Super Bowl every year, I say, you know, the great thing about radio is not everybody can be in front of a TV screen, but this is the most important thing going on in the world, talking about the Super Bowl. I think, just think of your captive audience. As opposed to TV, you could be at a party with the sound down. You could be in a bar with a lot of noise and not able to hear what's going on. And your eyes sometimes speak louder than the voices you're listening to. Your eyes guide you more. But on radio, you've got this captive audience that is hanging on every single word that you say. So the emphasis on the broadcaster being right is paramount. Not that it's less on TV, but the picture speaks so loudly that sometimes the words of the broadcaster don't necessarily connect. But on radio, all you've got is your imagination. All you've got is the theater. And if your imagination is one of the most important traits and emotions that you have as a human being, think what a great radio call can do in that theater, in your mind, at that moment, if you really care. And it's stunning to me, the people that I'll hear from that will say, we listened and we sat in our driveway and didn't want to go because we knew that maybe the excitement wasn't carrying over. And that's the other thing about radio. You've got to convey the excitement. Sometimes just the action doesn't really get the point across at how big that play was or how spectacular that catch was or how big that, you know, whatever. And our inflection can bring in that great full picture in your mind. So that responsibility is huge. And it gets back to the roots of why all of us got into play-by-play, to call big moments, to call big games. And on radio, it's heightened a little bit. On TV, a big play, you lay back, you keep your mouth shut. If a picture's worth 1,000 words, you don't have to say a thing. Like on our kick the other day in that Colts-Broncos game, once that kid for the Colts got that game-winning field goal, no need to say anything. Lay out. What am I going to say? On radio, you'd say, oh, and the benches are empty, and the kicker's being mocked. Now they hoist them on their shoulders. They're carrying them off the field, the crowd, until, you know, like you go on and on and on and on. But our great director gets all these pictures. I don't have to say anything. And so they're just two different ways of getting to the same destination. But I enjoy that challenge of trying to create that picture in people's minds.
As streamers kind of entered the landscape, it's interesting because the NFL is widely expected to opt out of existing television deals after 2029. You've just joined Amazon on the NBA side. Do you hope to kind of become more involved with streaming properties down the road? Like, I don't know how soon Thursday Night Football is looking for a successor for Al Michaels. I don't know who else may get in the game on the NFL side. What are your thoughts on kind of streamers entering the landscape here?
Well, it kind of sounds like everybody is in the league, at the league level for the different sports. They're embracing streaming. And I've even seen the people that know what they're talking about saying, we're not sure what's around the corner. We think it's going to hold. We think it's going to catch on. The NBA is banking people are going to pay for this service, as is NBC. Amazon, Netflix are hoping that people are going to pay for this. So much has been given for free. Maybe you've paid for cable, and that's been a small part of it. Now you've got to pay individually for these different streaming services. So I think we're kind of going into the great unknown here. Great maybe is too much. I don't want to be emphatic with that word. That probably is incorrect. But there's just a lot that we don't know, but there's enough that we do know that leads the people that are far smarter than me at a much higher level that know, yep, this is the way we need to go. Goodell has done it. Silver has done it. Bettman is about to do it. More, I think, with the NHL. The commissioner in baseball is in the midst of this right now, trying to figure out where his sport's going to go. So, and we're seeing teams in the local level doing more of it. So it's there. It's happening clearly, unfolding before our eyes, growing in prominence. I think you just hope that you can be a part of it. But I've always said, and I say this to college kids too, my job is not to worry about where the business is going. I want to be aware, but I can't worry. I want to be aware of what's going on, but I can't sit and worry about it. And so like I'll tell kids in college, whether I'm speaking to a class on a Zoom or have kids that contact me, I'll say, and I told my daughter who's in the business, I say, you cannot worry about everything going on around you. You need to worry about what you're doing, staying present, doing the best job you can do. And if you do that, and that's kind of what I've tried to do myself along my path, is to just do the best job I can. And you can sit, and there are people in our business that will work for jobs and politic for jobs and do all this stuff. And then I'd like to think the vast majority of us are just doing our best possible work and letting that work speak for itself, and then having a chance, an opportunity to join something that may be evolving. And while all the emotion was surrounding Turner, and let me tell you, that Eastern Conference Finals was hard to be a part of because you knew the end was coming. And every game, it crept closer. With the turning of every page and every new broadcast to do, we were one step closer to having the finality of that series. But you've got to keep the eye on the ball. And keeping your eye on the ball is paramount. And you cannot think too much about over here and over there, or what's ahead, but keep your eye on what's in front of you right there. And that was doing the best possible job for those games. And it's been something that I've, and you know what, there's going to come a time when there are going to be new hires, and I'm going to be looked upon as that was then, we need to find the next now. And I'll be okay with all that. I've been, like I said, blessed beyond measure in this business, so I'm not going to sit and hope, or I'm aware of what's going on, but not pining for anything and just trying to make my bosses at CBS, Westwood, and now Amazon feeling like they've hired the right person to do those jobs and enjoying the moment. I think that's probably what's come with being in the business so long, is just really enjoying and stepping back. And I've done more of that the last 5, 6, 7 years, stepping back and looking at what's in the field or the court, my partner and the people that I work with, and thinking about how lucky am I, something I dreamt of as a kid, I'm getting to live the life I've dreamt of career-wise and clearly personally. And my wife, we've been married 38 years. She's been a part of all these moves, every broadcast, every trip, every season, every sport. So we've done it together, which has been even more gratifying, quite frankly.
Kevin, I have to know, everybody, of course, knows Charles Barkley as this iconic studio analyst, but you've done some games with Chuck. I need to know from you, you got to give me a game prep or game broadcast Charles Barkley experience. I need it, Kevin.
Well, he knows more than he lets on. He is brilliant. He's brilliant that he knows the game. He's brilliant that he knows this business, which has come in the second part of his life. And he just has that larger-than-life personality that he blends the two. And so he's got a heart of gold, like Reggie Miller. He's got, like, it's so funny. Like, I got to be honest, the biggest names that I've ever worked with, and it's hard to get any bigger than Barkley, are invariably the nicest. When I was at Fox, John Madden, you know, and he didn't know me from anybody, but his kindness in Summerall and Stockton, their kindness toward me really made an impact. The biggest names in our business, I mean, Dick Stockton, Hall of Fame, Pat Summerall, as great as we've ever known. Madden, the Barkley of then. You know, like kind, giving. That's how Charles is. Not only with my family and our girls and our son over the years when they were just little people, but just like could not be kinder and so smart and so adept and great with other people, like kind to other, like I've watched them in arenas. I've watched them walk through crowds and how they would connect. And you know what? I think a lot of the biggest names in our business are like that. I think they are beyond kind and beyond grateful for their position in life. And Barkley has always been that. Charles has been kinder than kind, more than giving, so inclusive, great to everybody. Just, I cannot say enough about him as a person. And we all know what he's like as an on-air personality. But it's been one of the great treasures of my career. And I know countless others that have been around him to say that I've worked with Barkley. And I was lucky enough to be around Madden. And I don't know if there are two bigger names in our business than those two over the last 30, 40, 50 years.
I guess we'll kind of get you out of here on this. You mentioned Reggie Miller. You had such great chemistry with Reggie for so many years. And now, unfortunately, with him going to NBC, that's kind of done. What is it like when you have such a great relationship with an announcer and then you kind of have to move to a new relationship or move away from that relationship?
Well, it's hard. It's like you're losing a family member because Reggie and I had been together for so long. I knew I was there around him when his kids were born. He's been around me as our kids have grown up. I mean, Reggie Miller is one of the iconic people in the history of pro basketball, and he's had this incredible run at the network level broadcasting games, and now he gets to continue with Mike Tirico. So quite frankly, I'm so sorry to lose Reggie more as a friend than as a broadcaster, although I loved him as a teammate, but he was such a good friend and just such a good man, just such a good-hearted, kind, thoughtful man. And now he gets to join a guy that's just like him in Mike Tirico, who is a, I hope Mike feels the same way, but I don't know that I just think Mike hung the moon, and I just admire him on every level, personally, professionally. And now Mike and Reggie are together. And Jamal, who I love. So, you know, in this business, you know nothing is forever. So the older you get, the more you've been around it, the more you begin to appreciate, because every year and every partner is not quite like that. But when you have that relationship, you embrace it even tighter because, you know, it probably won't last forever. And here's another great example. I didn't have Boomer Esiason forever. Didn't have Doug Collins forever. I don't have Reggie now, but I love the guys that I'm with and enjoy that thoroughly. But Reggie will always have a very special place in my heart. I'm thrilled for Mike that he gets to enjoy what I've had a chance to enjoy. They'll be a great pair. They're going to add Jamal. He'll give them even more. So Reggie was terrific. And I've enjoyed every, I really can honestly say, as I'm going through the catalog of guys, and I've worked with Dan Dierdorf and Sims Clark Kellogg. I mean, like go on and on. I mean, on Doug Collins, I mentioned, I mean, all these people, Kevin McHale, like all these people. I hate to leave anybody out because there have been hundreds, but I've enjoyed every one of them and enjoy the guys I'm with right now so much.
Yeah. And John Thompson and Danny Ainge, too, for a lot of those years.
John Thompson, Danny Ainge. Danny Ainge knew that he knew what buttons to push with John. So Big John would sit next to me, and then Danny would sit to the right of John. And I'd feel this tap every once in a while during a broadcast. And it was Danny who was leaning back in his chair saying, kind of, throw it to me. And I throw it to him and he goes, "Coach, the big man again failing." I go, "Danny, why do you keep going? Why?" And they would just antagonize each other. And it was just so much fun. I love being with John, the late, great, love John, love Danny still. And again, just, yeah, two more people that I worked with and had the great benefit of being around.
And just one more thing before I let you go. When you do next year in March, you're going to probably end up doing maybe a game on TNT or TBS with the tournament, I would imagine, as you with your role with CBS. Will that be kind of a special wistful moment for you to be able to say TNT again on the air?
Oh, yeah. I knew it wasn't goodbye. It was until next time. I knew I wouldn't say goodbye forever, that there would be another time down the road, the tournament, that I get to work with them. Now you're hearing rumblings that maybe there could be a relationship that could go beyond what it is right now between that company and CBS, Paramount. So, yeah, but it will be. It'll be fun to say those three letters again. And listen, I as the Turner people told me, I did more play-by-play for them than any other broadcaster. When I first joined in 96, I was on the roster with Dick Stockton, Vern Lundquist, Hall of Famer, Hall of Famer, then Marv Albert, Hall of Famer. So I'd been on a list with like the great broadcasters of not only this generation, but of past generations, but had done more play-by-play NBA for them than any other broadcaster. So it's with a heavy heart that I leave, but also knowing that I'll get a chance to revisit that address down the road, and I'll look forward to that.
All right. Hey, Kevin, thank you so much. It was a great honor having you here. Great conversation. I know my listeners, all the folks who listen to this podcast, will really enjoy it as well.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Nice to visit with you guys, and I appreciate what you do for the business. Keep us on our toes, and I look forward to the next time we cross paths.
All right. Well, I hope you all enjoyed that conversation. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to Kevin Harlan, of course, for joining us. And thanks to Armand and Derek as well. We'll be back with more stuff down the line.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In-app only.